This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Alice and I were together at the National Mortgage Banking Conference, and she and I sat down, and they had the big all-day event, which is the Empower event. And I was so fortunate and very grateful that Marcia Davies invited me to come in and set up the booth so we could do interviews. And Alice, you and I sat down and interviewed David Robin, and I am so excited about this. So, folks, without further ado, I really want to go through and have you listen to this interview. It's more about leadership, and while there is a focus on Empower, which is so needed, it's really about leadership. So, without further ado, listen to the interview Alice and I conducted with David Robin, and I love your thoughts and feedback on it. Here you go.
Alice, good to have you joining me here at the table for this exciting interview.
It's great to be here, Dave. It's a wonderful hour event, and I can't wait to spend a few minutes with our next guest.
Yes. So, folks, we have with us David Robin, who's President and CEO of Wintrust Mortgage, located in Rosemont, Illinois. David, good to have you on the microphone with us.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Alice. It's good to be here. Rosemont is a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. It's famous for O'Hare International Airport.
Oh, that's right.
So we're a stone's throw from the runway. So.
Oh, how convenient. And you have nonstops everywhere you want to go from there.
We do. We can get almost anywhere.
With one flight, that's so true. First of all, Wintrust is a great company. We're familiar with it. It's been a stalwart in the industry, has done a great job over the years. But I heard you speak the Lenders One Summer Conference. Tricia Megliazzo, a dear friend, had you on stage talking about what you are doing inside of Wintrust to create opportunities and further women's careers within the industry. I mean, for all careers, not just women, but the focus of Empower is women and empowering women, helping them come up to have the full advantage of all the opportunities us guys have had all along. So anyway, that's why we're here, and I'm really excited to have you talk about what you're doing. But before we do that, let's let our listeners get to know you a bit, David. Your career, how long you've been in the industry, how did you get in the industry, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it brief and high level. I'll put you in a coma otherwise. But I graduated, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and went to Ohio Wesleyan University and joined a management consulting firm right out of school. And I've always been blessed to look a younger than I am, but that's not a great thing when you're in the consulting business at the ripe old age of 21. I looked like I was 12. And so I was there working for a couple of years, really enjoyed it, but knew that I needed to try and find a different path for my career in order to get jump started. I was always inquisitive, but I was always a little bit impatient, and got an interview with a mortgage company out of Springfield, Ohio, a company called the Kissel Company.
Oh, my gosh. That's
people may or may not remember, but they were one of the top 10 largest mortgage companies in the country.
Yes.
At a time when people couldn't name a mortgage company. And it was a great opportunity for me. I worked there for a couple of years and then relocated to go work in a mortgage office to really learn the business as a loan officer in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And they put me out there because they had a branch manager who would really take the time to answer all my crazy, stupid questions and be patient with me. And he was an amazing individual, still is. But went there, worked for a couple of years as a loan officer, then got recruited back from a regional at the Kissel Company, who went on to become president of a bank-owned mortgage company out of Detroit called Consumer Mortgage, which is part of Guaranteed Federal Savings Bank.
I was actually there for 1 year.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in 86.
So we might have crossed paths, because that sounds like I was there 87 to 88 or 86 to 87. So
we're
we'll have to check into that offline.
Yes. So I worked for them for a couple of years, and then the parent company ended up going under the way of FDIC ownership. And a couple of our folks had left to go and work for Sears Mortgage. Long story short, I got recruited to run policy procedure and regulatory compliance for Sears nationwide out of Chicago, and went to work for them. And then the career has included not only sales positions, but operations positions and corporate positions. And I share that with you because I've had an opportunity to see perspective on the sales versus op dynamic, the corporate leadership top-down sort of myopic view versus bottom-up, and everything in between. And it's been incredibly helpful, informative for me. And I used a word earlier called inquisitive. And I used that word by design because it was a word that was used to describe me when I was 7 years old. And not only could I not spell it, I had no clue what it meant. And it was given to me by a landscaper.
And I can only imagine the story.
Well, I'm 7 years old, and we had a tree in the front of our house that died. And my parents paid for a landscaper to bring a new tree, and it was a big tree. And I sat out there for literally the entire day and watched this guy, and I asked him no short of 200 questions. And he says, boy, you're inquisitive. So
it's a wonderful trait to have. If maybe you're asking the right questions, I think you learn a lot.
Well, I think so. And then after that at Sears, I went and worked for a mortgage wholesale company for a year, and then I found my way to Wintrust. And I've been there for 25 years.
Wow.
It's an amazing organization.
Yeah, been around a long time.
It has. It founded, I think, 27 years ago, 28 maybe. And they're a company that really kept its name behind the curtain. You didn't know who they were for years because the design was really to be decentralized, 19 different business operating units, operating entrepreneurial, independent, but sharing some corporate resources. And the holding company was behind the scenes. Well, when the housing recession came apart, we had customers going into our bank saying, I need to take my money out of your bank because you're a small little bank and you're probably not going to be able to make it. And that's when we had to introduce the fact that, no, actually, we were a multi-billion dollar bank holding company with 15 bank charters. So we started rebranding the name Wintrust a bit. And so it's come out from behind the curtain, but that's where we are. And today we're almost a $30 billion bank holding company headquartered in Chicago, about 4,500 employees, of which 1,100 work for the mortgage group, which is what I run.
So, okay, very good. It's quite a journey.
Other than 2 years in consulting business, this has been my life and my passion. And as I like to say, at some point you become proficiently unqualified to do anything else, right?
I love that. So that's a great phrase. I'll give you credit for that 2 times and then I'm going to just steal it. I think that's true. One of the things that stood out when I heard you speak in Salt Lake at the Lenders One Summers Conference is your commitment to bringing diversity inside to your company, specifically creating huge opportunities for women inside the organization. Talk about that. And where did that start, Dave?
Yeah. So a little bit of it has to do with the inquisitive nature, because you look at it and you walk into a boardroom or you walk into an executive office or you walk into a sales leadership conference and all you see is, you know, a very homogenous look, a lot of males, a lot of Caucasians. You know, and I ask the question, is it because only men are buying homes? Is it because only white men are buying homes? And I ask the question, why is that women don't like sales? Is that women don't like roles of leadership? And well, we all know the answers to those questions. And so I've sort of begged the question why we don't look like and feel like the communities that we serve and support. And we all know the influence that women have in the house buying decision, the family decisions. And so it's very relevant and very important.
That's so true.
And so I want to be able to work with someone as my lender who can relate to me, who understands me. And if the only options you have for me is white male and I happen to be a single female or I'm African American or I'm Hispanic or Asian, I may not have that natural trust, that inherent trust. Yeah. I may get there, but I'm not going to start there. And so being able to change that dynamic and just asking the question, why is it that way? And knowing that you can't change the switch overnight, we've been working at it now for probably 6, 7, or 8 years, in not only just instinctively, but by very monitored and measured steps. And we've done a lot of things to change that. Is it good for business? Maybe. I think so.
It is. It's got to be.
But is it the right thing to do? Absolutely.
Yes.
And it's the culture that we've really fostered and bred about, one, about equal opportunity, mutual level of respect, fairness, inequality, and inclusion. And so that's what we've been working on.
Understand the why. Now let's talk about the how are you bringing that about inside of Wintrust.
Yeah, in a number of ways. I'll try and motor through these. But we've hired a national diversity and inclusion officer who's really helped us learn things that we didn't understand, didn't see, things that maybe we had blind spots, and really helping to drive some of that. We have taken multiple different directions here. We have a internship program where we hire between a dozen and 24 rising juniors or rising seniors,
good,
interns every year. And we make sure that it's an equal balance of men and women, and also some minorities as well. So we make sure that it is a diverse group. We have a management rotation program. It's a 2 to 3 year program of either recent college graduates or folks that have been out for only a couple of years. And again, we've been very deliberate in making sure that we're hiring a balance of men and women into that program. We have hired and promoted people into executive leadership. Today, 3 out of 7 of our leaders at the mortgage company are women, and we're proud of that. And our board, we have specifically hired and brought on females into our board of directors.
Good.
We have taken a monitored and measured approach. We've gone back and looked at things that we could do to break the reason excuses for why women don't continue with the continuity of their career. And you've all heard them. Well, they're going to go and have kids, so they're going to take a time out of their career. Well, I look at it and say, is that what they want to do or is that what they have to do? They should be able to have options and choices. And if our healthcare benefits are really not providing them with a transition about how to fund and finance and afford that without feeling discriminated against or feeling like they're being left behind, then women have to take a step back, not because they chose to, but because the system required them to. And so we've gone back and adjusted our short-term disability program to provide a very long maternity leave program. We've been very deliberate in our culture about encouraging women and men to take paternity leave. So really,
both sides, that's great. Yeah. Both men and women. That's unusual inside of the mortgage industry.
And today, 42% of our sales force are women, and that's something that we're proud of as well. And the last thing I'll share with you, which is to me rubber hitting the road, is we've gone in and looked at how are we compensating men and women for the same position, same roles, same title, and is it equal? Because if it isn't, everything we're doing is just window dressing.
That's so good.
We've gone in and we've done that 2 years, 3 years in a row. This will be our fourth year of that and making whatever adjustment. And we've actually made adjustments for men as well as women now. And that's where it feels like we're starting to get to the right spot.
That's really good. Al, let's get you in on this conversation. Did you hear David speak in there?
I did. I was listening to the panel, and there's a few things. First of all, thank you, David, for everything that you've said, because as a woman, it means a lot to have that you can articulate that as the president and CEO of a company. And I hope everyone takes that recording and plays it very slowly, plays a section on all the how to do this, writes notes, and then thinks about how they can actually implement it, because what you've described, I'm sure, took place over a very long period of time, right? This type of change doesn't happen overnight. So I have two quick questions for you. I'm assuming across the entire corporation, right? Not just the mortgage company. And then could you talk a little bit about some of the measuring techniques? Because I love what you said about it's not the money, right? We're not trying to measure that it produced more customers or the women brought some kind of bottom line P&L value that's very measurable, right? It was about just it's the right thing to do. So could you talk about those two pieces for us, please?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been asked the question before, what message would you give to other men in leadership positions about how to either advance their efforts or start their efforts, whichever it is? And I've said the first place to start is asking the question, why do you care? Why is this even important to
That's
you?
Good.
Because if you're just doing it in order to raise more revenue or because it's the politically correct thing to do, you're going to be swimming upstream the whole time. That doesn't mean you don't do it. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to make an effort. But if you think hard about the value to society, you think about the value of if this was your mother, your wife, or your daughter, and how you'd like to see them be treated, then you really get to the root cause about why this initiative and this is a thing today. It's about doing the right thing. Because people, regardless of their race, creed, color, sexual orientation, their socioeconomic background, I believe that people all want to make a difference, and I believe that people want to care, that people want to matter, and that they want to make a difference. And so if you approach it with that mindset, really the things that you do become really just intuitive and natural. It takes time. I think as Byron on our panel said today, we're in that transition mode, and there's moments of awkwardness. But there's small things that you can do, and I learned this from, we had a consultant from Korn Ferry come in and talk to us, and they talked to us about inclusion, and they gave us a scenario about ends of the spectrum. And he says, everyone comes to a new experience, a new environment, whether it's work or a personal experience, and you all have this certain amount of trepidation or fear or anxiety about the paradigms or biases you're about to approach or embark upon. Everyone does. And so if you're a woman and you walk into a room of a lot of men, or if you joined a company and you're a woman or you're a minority and you see the leadership team, there's because really in a matter of seconds, they're going to tell you all that you need to know about the company. They will either reach out their hand, look you in the white of the eye, smile and say, we are so glad you're here. And if there's anything we can do, and by the way, do you have just a second to chat and tell me a little bit about you? You feel appreciated. In that moment of just that small little gesture, you can illustrate a culture and why it's so important of inclusion of everybody, and the difference that you can make for somebody is lifelong. Or you can give something less than that, and they may not feel appreciated, but they might feel accepted.
Right.
You might take it a step less than that, and they may feel sort of initially tolerated. You can really not even do anything other than a waving at them from afar, and they'll feel tolerated.
Yeah.
Or as they start to walk to you, you close their door in their face and they feel unwanted. And they really illustrated that the gestures and the efforts that you make as a management team, as coworkers, that you can make all of your employees by the smallest little conscious effort of doing the right thing and letting them know that they're either appreciated or accepted, and nothing else is acceptable. Nothing. That can help you with productivity, with retention, employee morale. And as we like to say, customer satisfaction begins and ends with employee satisfaction. So
that's so true. One, you spoke, what are some of the other points that you said made inside during your panel discussion that were really notable, that you heard in there also discussed, that were something that you think our listeners should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked in there about the fact that many of the current leaders are in their 50s or 60s. Mm-hmm. And when we came out of college, the management structure was one that really seemed to emulate out of military hierarchy. It was very military top-down, do as I say, not as I do, and very command and control oriented, authoritarian, if you will, and male dominated for sure. And we have changed as a society, as a culture, in sort of small ways, but measurable ways. And the Me Too movement, as much as it's a bit of a reviling topic, we owe him a little bit of gratitude, Harvey Weinstein, for really showing what is the ugliest part of life and putting a face and a name to it that can help open a dialogue. And we can't be afraid to, as we go through this transition, there's going to be some uncomfortable moments, some uncomfortable things. But if you lead yourself with integrity and you ask questions and you're comfortable with and helping to transition through it, we'll get there. We really will. But don't do this sort of step about saying, well, I stepped my toe into it. It didn't feel good. So I'm going to back away. And my good friend, Steve Scanlon, who owns a company called Rewire, which focuses mm-hmm. on emotional intelligence, his comment, which just resonates with me every single day, he says, when we go to try and change human behavior, we become hardwired. It's not easy. You can't just ask something. You can't say one thing. You can't subscribe to something. Do it one time and expect to change something that's become hardwired. He said, you've got to hear the message, see the message, or experience it 7 different times in order to affect that change. And he goes, but that's with an asterisk. That 7 different times is for people that have an IQ level of a genius. For the rest of us, it's 21 times.
Right.
So
I wrote that down when you said
it. And it really is. And so when you go in there and you don't get the reaction that you're looking for, don't get alligator arms. Keep pushing through. That's women good. Are not only wanted, they're needed. They have a huge value. They bring a different dynamic. My daughter has a master's degree in the learning sciences, and she's taught me so much. Taught me about understanding that, you know, you mentioned it earlier, David, when you said you sort of retain or recall stuff from sort of hearing things.
Yeah, an auditory skill.
I didn't even know that was a thing, right?
Yeah.
And my daughter has taught me that's where she's really applying technology to help no kid left behind.
Yes.
Is whether you recall and retain from listening, speaking, hearing, writing it down, seeing it, reading it.
Yep.
We all listen and learn differently. And she gave me an example about the whole STEM program, about math and sciences, and about why women seem to be turned off by it. And she says it's really around puberty. And she said, and we've actually been able to uncover the fact that it became from the historic sort of old school teaching style, that a lot of math and sciences are memorization, and a teacher would turn their back to the students and write on the board. As a male, I don't care if the teacher turns my back to me. That's just another chance for me to play paper football or something, right? I don't care. But a woman, she said, either instinctively, intuitively, frequently will have this either conscious or unconscious bias about that reaction,
well,
about feeling like maybe he's turned his back to us, and it's a feeling of disengagement or disrespect. And she says, and when you watch that, now there's this paradigm that boys really like math and sciences and girls don't. So if a girl asks a question in a science class, the teacher will give a one-word answer or a one-sentence answer because he thinks she's just trying to get a good grade, and that the boy asks the question and he gets a soliloquy because he's actually interested in it. And she says, so we actually went and coached teachers about teaching style, and to see the differences of engagement absolutely turned upside down. It was amazing.
That's a great study. And one of the things that came up in the session that I'd love to get your thoughts on is that conversation between men and women, right? Yeah. That we do have to revisit that, sit down and say, here are the do's and the don'ts of things in the workplace. Yeah. One of the examples that was given was a pretty obvious one, right? For your final interview with the CEO, he shouldn't invite you to his house at 10 o'clock at night, right? That should be pretty obvious that that's in the don't go there if that's the type of final interview that you have, and men know that's not appropriate no matter how you want to spin it. So did you have those types of conversations? Did you feel that was a necessary phase in moving to this, to kind of get started with having the right conversations and ethics between your partners? That we use the term partners for employees.
So it's evolutionary. When I came out of college in 1983, there were no rules of engagement. So you just sort of watched and looked and sort of acted or behaved what the behavior that you saw, to the extent that you were comfortable with certain things. And there was people that pushed those boundaries that were horrific and others that didn't. And so a bit of your own sort of natural wiring helped shape it, but not until there's really been the augment or the advances of human resource departments in helping to create some policies and procedures and rules of engagements, sensitivity training, harassment training. And those have been things that have been happening for at least the last decade, but not until the Me Too movement has it become even so much more powerful. And so our human resources department, our training departments are all working to do just that, provide our managers and our employees about rules of engagement, about what is acceptable and absolutely what's unacceptable. And then beyond that, there's the element of judgment in most people.
And that's the topic of it, right? Yeah. Everybody write that down. Rules of engagement.
Yes. Yes. But there seems to be a heightened sensitivity to engage in some of this, because especially after the Kavanaugh hearings and the Weinstein. It's just, there's such hypersensitivity where we're finding, I'm talking to executives that are going, I was thinking about this, but I'm now more afraid to do this. How have you overcome that at Wintrust? I guess it's rules of engagement we're really talking about there, and how do you do it?
Yeah, one simple thing that somebody said, well, am I allowed to be in the car alone with a woman anymore to just drive down, you know, for an hour business trip, right? You know, what's changed in light of this?
Yeah.
For some organizations and some people, this is a major change for them. And those are the ones that maybe should be a little bit nervous, if you will. But for other people, it's just a little bit more clarification, a little bit more defining. It's a little more evolutionary. And so it doesn't feel uncomfortable. There's a little bit of maybe questions, but always doing the right thing. I mean, if you've got a woman in the car with you and you're having a conversation, that should never be a problem. It's a human being.
That's
it's
right.
Not a man and a woman. It's a human being. It's an employee. It's a coworker. Now, if you lean across the console and you go to kiss her on the ear, right?
Or even less invasive than that. It's understanding and getting a sense of someone's boundaries. Everyone has certain levels of boundaries, and there's the expressive personalities like me, who I'm a hugger, I hug everybody. There's clearly some that are not comfortable with that. And I think in this society, we need to be comfortable who we are, but while respecting who they're at and quickly reading those signals. And I think that's the coaching that we need.
David, that's a great point. I too am a hugger, and people sort of asked me the question, you know, during the Me Too environment, does this mean you're not going to hug anyone anymore, David? And I said, no, I'm going to hug her. I'm absolutely going to hug, because I don't hug them because there's a sexual overtone.
That's right.
This is because it's a warmth. It's an illustration of respect. It's of caring. It's about collaboration. It's about community. That's just who I am. It's who they are. And if I look at them and they reach out their hand, well, I'm not going to swipe their hand away and go in for a great big hug.
Yeah,
so you
great.
Read people's body language
as
well. But it's about just doing the right thing. And, you know, and Byron in our conversation at the panel today talked about really eliminating sexuality reality from the workplace. And that's part of the rules of engagement. I think part of it has been viewed in the past as maybe even, you know, fertile hunting grounds
yep.
for dating. There's so many different ways to find partners today with all the social
right.
media.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it at work, for gosh sakes.
Yep.
Right?
Well, I think those are things, and I think it's the elephant in the room is, you know, how do you have those interactions when that element is here? I mean, a male, we're visually driven and things like that,
yep.
which really comes to coaching on women, how to dress professionally. And I use Alice Alvey as probably the best example. I mean, attractive, very feminine, but also just really one of the most professional dressers. Our last mortgage company is in Southern California, and we were a consumer direct company. And so everyone showed up the space and wearing flip-flops and shorts. And I'll never forget, it deteriorated to the point where we had to have the HR lady had to pull all the females to talk about, quote unquote, foundation, the importance of foundational garments, you know, while to figure it out. Otherwise, I know what it was. So it's like, it's hard to believe that we have to have that conversation today that, and seeing the most common sense things, but common sense doesn't seem to be so common.
We're complicated animals.
We are.
Especially
when you start talking about clothing.
I
right?
know.
Marcia actually put up an example
yeah.
of, at the very beginning of the event, you know, because things are going fantastically, and someone actually sent her a text that was, congratulations, and by the way, you look great, right? So really clearly missing the whole point that it's not about looks, right? That shouldn't even be a part of the conversation.
It shouldn't be, but I think I'm trying to figure out how to raise it to the point where we have a comfort. If we mess up, someone can, but Alice has done for me. She's helped me so many times, David, has helped me
yep.
set good boundaries where I have some blind spots.
So I look at it and say, back to the point about hugging and not mm-hmm. hugging and interacting. I have seen people, men, that have seen women in the workplace, and I watch her, and I watch them look them up and down. And
good
then
point.
When they approach, they'll say, oh, I love your shoes, or boy, that's a beautiful dress, or is that new hairstyle? And I look at that and I say, if this was a social environment, if this was a neighbor,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe that would be appropriate, but they're not dressing for me.
Yes.
Not going, you know what, that's a really great tie you
right.
got on. Would that same person say, I love the cufflinks, where'd
right.
you get them? Yeah.
It minimizes.
Yeah.
And my daughter taught me the word about subconscious or unbiased minimalization is what she calls it. And she said, when all I've done is I've recognized you based on your looks or by your apparel, I've literally wiped the carpet from underneath you about what you bring to the conversation about your intellect and about your work performance. And so as a absolute rule of thumb, I never comment on any of that. And I encourage my male counterparts
That's so good.
To not do it at all. There's just no upside to it. I want to talk to you about your work. I want to talk to you about your family. I want to talk to you about you as a person. I want to talk to you about what's important to you. I want to talk to you about leadership, all those kind of things. But I don't really want to talk to you about your clothing or your hair or your shoes. And I'm going to look you in the white of the eyes. And that's it.
That's a good point.
So,
boy, that's a good, there's some wisdom in that one. Yeah, a round of applause. Yes. I think that is, we need this training. And Tricia Megliazzo, which is a big fan of you, says he's probably one of the most articulate. And hearing you in this 30 minutes we've had to gather here is just really hearing how well you communicate this. I encourage you, David, to help bring what you're doing in Wintrust out to the rest of the organization, Mortgage Banking Association, because we really need some good teaching on this. And it's coming forward. And I'm encouraged that we're having the dialogue finally, because that means it's creating opportunity and a real clear path and a safe path to the top for many more women.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, David. I mean, you've heard the expression before, if it's something that's important to you, why not me? Why not you? Why does it have to be someone else?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so I am in a position where I can help affect some change, at least in my own organization. And when I get fortunate enough to be invited to speak on panels or whatever else, to maybe have some comment that resonates with others in my industry or peers, I'm happy to do so. And because I think that there's strength in numbers, I think there's strength in education, and there's strength in awareness. And so I'm grateful to you for having me on here.
After this interview, this won't be the last time. We're going to have you on with some regularity, because it's really one of the topics that I really want to bring forward, because I think there's a lot of us, and I say us, including myself, that has tried to find the right balance. And my wife has been a great compass. She said, you know, you didn't need to say it that way. Alice has been there at times where I'll make a comment. It's my outgoing, part of it is our express, for those of us who are expressives, and our mouth will get ahead of our brain a few times, and you'll go like, man, I guess I could have phrased that differently. So I think it's how to feel safe with who you are and how you are, but maturing. Just because I'm an expressive doesn't mean I can't come in to tighten up the boundaries of some of that. And that's really what I'm hoping to have you articulate for all of us and our industry. We need that. And I hope you'll come back and do a lot more of it.
It'd be my pleasure, David. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much. We've had as our guest,
David
Robin.
Yes, sir.
Who is President and CEO of Wintrust. How can people get a hold of you, David?
Wintrust Mortgage is wintrustmortgage.com is our website. You can find me there, or you can email me at D, followed by my last name, HROBON, at wintrustmortgage.com.
Encourage you to reach out to David. Boy, his message really resonates with me. So, David, thank you for being here. Expect a call to get rescheduled soon. Thank you.
My pleasure, David. Thanks for having me. And Alice, thank you so much.
Thank you, David,
you
for being here.
Alice, thanks for joining me on this interview.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
It was a great interview. I like David. I like anybody who is really articulate. So I hope you enjoyed that interview. I really welcome your feedback on this topic, especially on this topic. There's all the topics we are covering here are important, but this is one about leadership. I encourage you to share it with others. Next week, we have joined. By the way, I want to say thank you again to Alice for joining on that interview. It's just so much fun to work with Alice. What a great professional and friend. Next week, we have as our guests Adam and Ari of SoftWorks AI. There's so much talk about AI, and we're going to have them on as our guests. Also, Robert Smedley. My good friend Bob of People's United Bank, and Simon Moyer of eOriginal. We're going to be talking about digital mortgages. There's so much to cover. That 1 hour isn't doing it. So we're going to do a double hitter on Hot Topic next week, and I hope you'll have the ability to tune in and be here with us. Again, a special thank you goes out to our sponsors. We're so grateful to have them. Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, MBA, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, Velma, The Knowledge Coop, and Vidyard. So good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week. And if you're at the LMA conference, be sure to look me up to send me a text message. I'd love to see you. Thank you. Have a great week.
You've just heard an audio clip from Lickin' on Lending, and here are the sponsors that make this show possible.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Today we're going to take the next step in creating effective stories to grow your business. But remember, the three elements each story needs are 1, a relatable hero, 2, a relevant challenge, and 3, an honest struggle. These three elements need to be in every story you tell, period. When you add these three elements together, they always lead to the same conclusion, which is a worthy lesson. When refining these stories, it's best to begin with the end in mind. After all, the worthy lesson is the purpose of your story. If your story has no purpose, you have no story. If you have no story, you're just rambling and wasting the listener's time. Also, if the story does not further your specific purpose, you have the wrong story. Is your primary motivator customer service? Great. Tell a story that showcases your passion for customer care and understanding. Are you primarily motivated by closing as many loans as efficiently as possible? Good. Tell your partners and customers so they know your driving purpose is delivery. Have a client that doesn't understand the difference between a home equity line of credit and a HECM? Good. Tell your story and it will serve as a beacon in the fog. Define the purpose of your story by asking questions about yourself as well as about your business partners and customers. Always consider the purpose while creating your story. If the story doesn't follow your purpose, you have the wrong story. Remember, creating effective stories is a science. There are formulas to follow that will yield measurable and proven results. Next time, we'll look at more essential elements of all good stories for your business. Until then, begin thinking about the worthy lesson. Your stories end so you can begin.
Of course, our newest sponsor is back. It's actually like bringing him back. You know, they go away like kids every once in a while, but they come back because this is a great place to advertise. We're thrilled to have Finastra back as an advertiser. Finastra's Fusion Mortgage Bot solution automatically addresses compliance issues while delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction and increased productivity. Greater market share. That's something we all could use a little bit more of. Most lenders are needing more market share. So check out Finastra, Finastra, and Fusion Mortgage Bot product.